Blog Talk Radio.
Howdy, Rays fans. How the hell are you? Steve Billmeyer here, your host for this evening's episode of Racing with Big Sweat. I'm the one they call Big Sweat. Excuse me there. And I'm here, and we're going to see if we can't talk to a couple of race-winning drivers that I've been keeping up with here for the past few weeks. A dirt late model driver who's also venturing into sprint car racing, young man, Mr. T.J. Hughes, and a gentleman from up in Michigan, I do believe, Terry Seneca, who is a car builder and a driver, and has a very fine product from what I've seen on the board. So we're going to talk to them and find out what's happening in their world. Let me introduce you to my co-host, my partner in crime, the man who's in here with me on Thursday nights, Mr. Chris Yellow Caution Flag Creighton.
Howdy do. How are you?
I'm finer than him, Steve.
Well, at least I was unmuted seconds before I come on air. So this time we got me on the air at call time. Isn't that unusual, Steve?
I'm impressed, to say the least.
Beautiful night here in Mississippi, getting ready for the Southern Street Stock Nationals, the biggest street stock event since Darlington Speedway was built. It is absolutely the premier event at Why Not Motorsports Park. Steve, I got to tell you real quick, what would you do if you come to the racetrack this weekend and it was 100-plus street stock cars? What would you do? You'd rent a room, I hope.
Yeah,
you'd come for the second night of it.
I'd get a room and a pit pass and have me a good weekend.
That's right. Well, I get to call it, so I'm sure by the end of the weekend I'll be hoarse, so we'll go ahead and get the talking out of the way tonight. They got practice down there tonight. I didn't show up for it, so I had other obligations. And, you know, you scared me last week. We wasn't on the air. And, you know, I just want to remind you once again, Steve, I appreciate the opportunity to come on here and be able to talk to these fans and talk about what I love. That's dirt track racing and racing in general. And it's just an honor to be on this show. And I appreciate you every week that you do it.
Well, thank you very much. And, I'm glad to have you on here with me. You definitely know a lot about the side of racing that I don't know a lot about, so I enjoy learning from you. I hate we missed last week, but
it's just easy to fool you because you don't know much about it.
Yeah, that helps.
No, I think I've proven my worth, Steve, over time.
Absolutely.
Definitely. And racing in the South is just now heating up, race fans. If you don't know about the Gulf Coast area and the Southeast region, you know, we race from about the beginning of March all the way through October. Most of the year, it's, you know, just weekly racing. Come this time of year, we're getting ready for these big events where you're seeing 200-plus cars show up at tracks every weekend. So if you've got the little bit of pocket change in your book, you've been saving it up in your little savings account, make sure that you pull it out and come on out here and support your local dirt tracks as we wind the 2016 race season down. I mean, come November, we'll be talking about how much we're ready for racing to come back.
Yeah, this is like if you've ever put in tobacco, you know this is where you're in the short rows now. You're in that long summer stretch before it ends, so you got to get what you can get. And this is an exciting time of the year, really, for local short track racing, this long stretch between the end of summer and school and everything else starting back. But I see our first guest is called in, so let's go ahead and get on with this, because I definitely want to talk to this driver making the transition from dirt late model to sprint cars, Mr. T.J. Hughes. TJ, how you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm doing fine. How are y'all doing?
Tonight, the first one was a pick six in case you joined us late.
We're doing great. Let me mute this TV here. My goodness gracious. Sorry about that, y'all.
We also got two interceptions in the end zone tonight.
Turn it off. How about that? There we go. Well, doing good, TJ. How about you, man? How's life up there in Arkansas?
Now, I'm Mississippi, too. I live in Hernando.
Oh, you're in Mississippi?
Yeah, I live in Hernando.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Well, you
West
travel
Memphis
around through all those racetracks, though, don't you? You're in between Tennessee and Arkansas and Mississippi, huh?
Yeah, this year I've been to, Corinth, Riverside, obviously, in West Memphis, NEA Speedway in Harrisburg, Duck River up in Tennessee. I'm missing a track or two. I don't know, but yeah, I travel all around this tri-state area.
Wish you were down here for this big street stock event this weekend, man. I tell you what, you're missing a big one.
Ooh, man, I wish I had one to drive. I just got back from the frame or the body shop or whatever. I just had to pull the frame back on my late model from this past weekend. So it straight looks pretty good now.
Yeah, we've seen a little crinkling up on the thing. What happened this weekend?
I started eighth in my heat and went to second on the first lap. And me and the first place car had a good run the whole heat race. And I blew up. It was a crazy night. I blew a power steering hose, a pressure hose, and still ran second in the heat. And then was working on it, fixed it, and then made my debut in the car that Jimmy Huffman owns. That's my full-time sprint car right now.
There you go.
It was our first night in it, and went out, and I don't remember where I started. I started on the rear, just where I drew, and that's where I finished. Didn't pass anyone. Pretty much just a shakedown night. The fuel pump was leaking alcohol all over my feet and legs. We come in, and after the heat race in the sprint car, I finished fixing the late model and had another guy there helping me named Brad Woods. He's the one that finished it. And then was jumping back and forth from both cars, you know, and went out for the feature in the late model, started pole. I was the second high point guy. Well, the guy that actually got pole chose to start on the outside to put me on pole. I was running second. We did a double file start, you know, obviously. Caution come out. So we restarted double file again. Then I think we completed a lap. I'm not sure. But anyhow, we got another restart. And then on my last restart that I made, we made one lap, and then running into turn three, when I hit the brakes to set the car, the heim on my torque arm on the rear end broke. You know, there's round, you know. Well, it completely straightened it, just ripped the ball out of it, and my rear end twisted or spun around, ripped the drive shaft out of the car. Then the guy that was behind me couldn't whoa up. He was already sideways and set, you know, and he slid in and hit me in the left rear, the very back of the car, you know, on the bumper, on the left rear frame rail or whatever. And it knocked it over about a foot, bent it down. It got it good. Broke a J-bar. Luckily, I didn't hurt a birdcage or shocks, but it broke the torque arm. A stabilizer, the adjuster for the J-bar. All four bars and heims are bent. And then got the frame itself. But it's going back together now, so maybe it'll work out all right. And then in the feature, we went out in the sprint car, and it was leaking fuel. The car was too tight when we went out, but I still ran it and finished the race, you know, just to learn and deal with it, you know. It was the first time to be on a tacky track, too. That was pretty fun. They got some pictures of me toting the left front tire like I was in a late model still. Right rear's a little soft, but it was fun. Just a big learning curve I've got to get used to. Our next big race that we're going to run is September 2nd. I think it was September 2nd is what he said. I'm not sure. Jimmy Huffman told me about it a little while ago. He was up there with me while I was pulling on the frame of the late model. But it's an MSCA 305 series race at Crawley's Ridge. we're going to race one of the Comp Cam Super Late models are there.
All right.
So, but I'm going to run before then also in it, but that's going to be the first big deal.
Right. That's awesome.
How you feeling in it? You feel pretty comfortable?
Yeah, I like it. It fits my driving style, wide open, you know. When I do lift, it's not much. So
yeah.
Driving a sprint car, I mean, you've got to – that's one thing I learned, you know, you've got to drive them on throttle. The brakes hurt you in them. It's fun to drive. I've got to get used to how quick the steering is on them. I thought my late model had quick steering. Oh, no.
Yeah.
It's real darty, you know, because it's such short wheelbase, you know. And
yeah.
The steering's quicker. But it's fun. I'm comfortable in it. So we'll see what happens.
Now,
you said you pretty much have to drive them and turn them with the throttle. And you mentioned that you were tight in the car last time out. What's it like, and how do you overcome being tight in that sprint car? Since usually when you're tight, you have to wait on the gas in instead of being able to use it to help you to turn. What were you doing to help yourself?
Like in the late model, when I'm real tight, I try to drive it in deeper before I try to turn the car so I don't run out of turn. But in the sprint car, I try not to lift, period, and get the car to sit how it's supposed to, and then I don't lift off the gas pedal, but drag the brake to try to bind the car up is what it feels like it's doing. I don't know the sprint car terminology, but that to me, that's what it feels like, is it's binding the car up and making it brake free, you know. But that's how I was having to get it turned this past weekend, and sometimes that wasn't even working. Jimmy said I had the rear brake rotor was glowing orange under me. So,
yeah,
I was doing all I could do.
I guess that's
why the tight
sprint car.
Yeah.
Do what now?
Steve.
Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, I was saying, you know, with a tight sprint car, that's got to be kind of nerve-wracking, considering, you know, tight means you can't turn. And with those kind of speeds, sawing on a steering wheel just to get it to turn left has got to be a hypertension moment for sure.
I thought about it the first lap or two when I felt the car roll over on the right side, being in a sprint car doing that. Felt kind of weird.
Right.
You could tell it didn't feel good to the car itself, you know?
Right.
But after the first couple laps, I felt comfortable enough with it. I started driving and not lifting unless I could not get it to turn. But,
so when you say that you felt it in a bind, you can kind of just feel the flex in it? Is that what we're kind of talking about there, where you just, at first, you're not comfortable, you kind of feel the thing pulling up towards the wall of the track, but then you realize after you've dove it in there a couple of times that it's going to flex on you. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, not necessarily that the car is flexing. It feels like it's really hard to describe. Like I said, I don't know the sprint car terminology of it yet.
Right.
I mean, I'm in a big learning curve, driving-wise, setup-wise, you know, everything.
Right.
Like I said, the car drives on throttle. If you'll watch a video of sprint cars hot lapping, you'll notice when they run down the straightaways, they try not to lift. And if they do lift, they actually lift before they get to the turn and then stand back in the gas to turn the car. Because it keeps it pinned over and keeps everything loaded where the car is meant to turn. If you let off of it, like, if you run down, it's really hard to do this on a slick track, is when you run down the end of the straightaways, you want to just drag the brake to slow the car down to make it turn like I would in a late model, you know. You don't want to jab on it, and you can't run in there wide open, obviously. But in the sprint car, you know, you're still not going to run in it wide open, but you're going to stay on the throttle. You know, you run down there and hit the brakes, it actually, like, just completely frees the car up. The car, like, wants to go into escape, you know.
Right. That's that small,
like I said, it feels like
small
it
wheel
feels
radius
like it kinda,
right there.
Yeah, it kind of feels like it just binds it up, makes it skate, you know.
Right.
Like I said, I wish I could describe it a little better, but.
Well, given time,
like I said,
I think you will, TJ, because, I mean, it's kind of a unique position to hear, you know, this side of it. Now, if we had another guy that was you know, like a Brian Bell or something like that on, Brian would be able to, you know, kind of help you fill in on exactly what it is that you're feeling there. But, you know, given time,
yeah.
I think you'll be able to explain that to us a little bit better. It's really cool that we're getting the experience kind of from firsthand what it's like to be behind the wheel of a sprint car considering you're a seasoned racer.
Yes, sir. And
new to me, and I'm hanging on every word.
Yeah. Well, the thing was, like, when Jimmy got these cars, he got me two of them. And they're both pretty much rolling, you know. And then one of them, you know, needs a few more parts than the one I'm racing now. But they're the same type car, so I can literally unbolt everything and go again the next night if I had to, you know, bolt everything onto the other car. Well, one of our friends, Ronnie Howard, was helping me, going to help me put the car together. The big thing was our Cody Burks Memorial Race was not this past weekend, but the weekend before at Riverside. Well, that was the big race. Jimmy wanted me to be out there at least for that race as my first one, you know, but hopefully before then. Well, Jimmy made a YouTube video on our Huffman Motorsports page and said that, you know, it's going to be more than likely towards the end of this year, if not next year, before he was able to finish the car because of funds. Well, like I said, Ronnie's good friends with both of us. Ronnie came over here and looked to see what all we needed, and he said, man, I can help you out with this, blah, 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 blah. Well, he told me to get the car and everything we have to his house, and he'd help me build it, you know, and hurry up and get it there for the Cody Burks race. Well, I refused to do that. I'm a mechanic, you know, so I want to know everything, how everything is working, you know, as I'm driving the car. You know, for one, it helps me as a driver know what's going on, you know, what I'm feeling possibly or whatever. Well, I kept the car here, and I went on about 10 hours of sleep all week, not this past week, but the week before, obviously. And then we worked on it. I carried it over to Ronnie's house finally Friday night, and the race was Saturday. And Ronnie had to help me set all the fuel stuff, and that's almost science right there. That's crazy to me, the way it's done. But anyhow, Ronnie was going to help me do all that stuff Friday night and then Saturday and then letter it and go to the track and race. And Jimmy had no idea. You know, had a few people that I called and I trusted, you know, and they helped us out with a couple little parts or this, that, and other, you know, to help us get it together. But no one knew that we were getting the car together and going to take it to the track for the Cody Burks race. Well, come 4:30 that Saturday, Ronnie looked at me. He said, dude, we don't have time. You know, I mean, we were that close to being able to have it there to surprise Jimmy. Like I said, Jimmy had no idea whatsoever. Well, I had to keep it a secret all week last week, too. And obviously we finished the car and got it lettered and all that mess. And then one of my friends was sitting there talking to Jimmy at the turn 4 entrance onto the track where we pull onto the track to race, you know. Jimmy was sitting in his truck. And I was like, dang it, when I rounded the back outside the track from 3 to 4. I said, dang it, there's Jimmy. He's going to see the car. Well, I had my late model and my enclosed trailer, and one of my friends was pulling the sprint car on the open trailer. So Jimmy seen it as soon as we pulled in the track. So that kind of part was kind of blah, but I wish it could have surprised him a different way. But, you know, he had absolutely no idea. But one of my friends was sitting there talking to him and asked about it. And Jimmy said, no, I don't know when it's going to be ready, you know, blah, blah, blah. And Jimmy said, no sooner than he said that, my friend drove past him with the car on the trailer. My buddy was like, hey, what? Look at that. So they were both freaking out on that. So I got to surprise him that way, but. You know, I don't know, the moral of that was, you know, I sat at home and built it before I carried it over there for the most part. I mean, it was a rolling car. I put the motor in. Like I said, I didn't do any of the fuel stuff. Put the motor in. I disassembled the car, what was there. It was a rolling car, and started over. And I cleaned everything and lubed everything as I put it together, you know.
Right.
So it was a learning deal.
So you put your first sprint car, you took it apart and you put it back together.
Yes, sir.
Wow.
That's one way to learn.
There's really not much to them.
That's really the only way to learn, Steve. I mean, you know, he's making sure he knows, I guess, you know, what every part does and why it's there when you take it apart like that.
and you can ask anyone that has helped me, and like the questions I ask them, you know, like when I ask them, I feel like, I don't even know how to word this, like I feel really, I mean, I guess I am stupid to the sprint
car. Yeah, it's the greenhorn feeling. Huh?
Yeah,
you got the old greenhorn feeling, huh?
Yeah, I ask them, I'm like, this might be a dumb question, but by doing this, what does that actually do to the car, you know?
And I'm Steve, used to people, remember those days?
Oh, God, yeah.
I'm used to people calling me and asking me about late model stuff, you know?
Right.
Yeah,
and
right.
I never really think about it. Well, now that I'm doing it in a sprint car, I'm like, man, these people think I'm an idiot.
Well,
you know?
I come up with one thing. If you're not comfortable, then you're doing it right. You know, that's
right.
What I've always been told in this business. If you're uncomfortable, you're doing it right. If you're comfortable, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Which leads me to a great, you know, a good story. I mean, look, this past week, well, a couple weeks ago, we were at Why Not, and I don't know, you may know him, Cliff Williams, drives the number 11 late model. Anyway, he was, he's a big-time driver over this way. Well, he was coming out for his hot laps, man, and he went through one and two real good. It seemed like he got through three, and then all of a sudden in four, she just flipped over on him. The wheel come flying off. Well, I talked to him later in the week after, you know, because I knew he banged himself up pretty good, but talked to him later in the week. I said, we were all in awe, man. What made that tire come off? He said, look, I've been driving race cars for 20 years. I've never had one come off the tire like that. He said that his boys were helping him work on the car, and one of them was watching the street stock race, and he asked him, he said, did you tighten the lug nuts on the wheel? And he said, no, sir. Well, Cliff never checked it and never went back and checked it. So he got out there, and like I said, it was in hot laps. He come around one and two, and when he got around three and four, the house a hook. Well, you know, he hooked. And he said that, you know, He had never forgotten that, but that one time that he did, it costed him. I mean, if you get comfortable, you're messing up.
And that's similar to me this past week. You know, I did not touch my late model at all. I literally, after the Cody Burks race, I literally did not roll my late model out of the trailer until I got to the track this past weekend again. Didn't wash it or anything because I was focused on the sprint car 150%, not 110,
right.
150%. I literally did not even wash my car. On the heat race, it was good, and a pressure line blew, which that's something I would have never found in doing the weekly maintenance anyway. You know, you don't check your lines like that, you know.
Right.
But the Heim, more than likely, I would have found it because I put a wrench and socket or whatever on every single nut and bolt on the car every week, and I lube every Heim. You know, if something squeaks, I find out where it's squeaking. I take it apart, clean it, lube it up. You know, if it's still squeaking, then I replace it. Well, in the heat race, I thought I heard it, but I wasn't for sure. You know, heard a little slack in something, you know, like under a caution. And then, like when I get on and off the gas, like I get here, you know. Well, then I forgot about it with all the other problems after the heat race. We go out for the feature. I push the clutch in to go, and I heard, I was like, oh, man. What the heck is that? Well, if you watch my in-car camera, you could probably see me doing it. I was, like, tilting my head over to the left, like, trying to put my left ear, which I had my helmet on, obviously, but, like, against the back of my seat because I thought it was one of my four bars behind me with the Heim that was bad. You know, it had slop in it. And I kept hitting the gas on and off, you know, making the noise. You know, so if I would have worked on my car last week, I probably wouldn't have tore up my car this weekend.
My goodness gracious.
Crazy.
So you said you're going to be running the ASCS race here in a couple weeks? Or is that the MSCS?
The MSCA. It's the 305
MSCA.
Series.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the 305 Sprint Car Series. I drove Ronnie Howard's 360, and I ran his 305 at Crawley's Ridge with the USCS 360 series. And then I ran my first 360 race at Greenville, you know, a few weeks back. Well, tried to, but we hot lapped and then it rained out. But that was a USCS race. And, you know, this past weekend, they were down there at Jackson, the ASCS versus USCS.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Ronnie was trying to get me to come down there and drive his 360 in that. But I couldn't hold off another week from people saying anything and ruining the surprise, you know, that we worked so hard for. So I carried the 305 to Riverside, but I do plan on running some this year, hopefully.
That's really a good little series there, and since they've become the SCS instead of the SOS, I think that they've added a little bit more geographic of cars by expanding their region. A lot of times, you know, when you expand your region, you know, a lot of times it doesn't work, but I think with this situation, the ASCS is actually going to benefit from it, and the revival of the USCS has been awesome. I mean, they have been putting on some great shows, and Mr. Pete Walton and that
man,
whole group
Pete,
right there, they're just, they're showing us how to do it in series racing.
Yeah, Pete is the promotingest guy I've ever met in my life. He works his butt off for that series. I could never hope anything but the best for him and Miss Sherry, you know, his wife. You know, they work hard for it. You know, sometimes their shows take a little longer, but, geez, what traveling series does go on time at tracks that you don't race normally, you know?
Right.
That's the only thing that anybody ever complains about, but like I said,
well,
I mean,
you know, and it's because most of the time it takes a while. You know, these tracks that they go to, they're not used to moving sprint cars. Be honest with you, sprint car racing almost died in the southeastern region. It may have been okay up near the Tennessee area and in Arkansas, but down here near us, it almost completely bottomed out. I mean, a few years ago, we were only getting 11 or 12 sprint cars, period. In the last 2 to 3 years, we've seen a drastic change, and fans are getting excited. So crew workers really don't have the experience of pulling them apart, and then, of course, they have to be pushed off to get started back. But we've ran a couple of 50-lappers for, I think this is the third year, fourth year, and we call it the flip-flop. And 25 laps, they race for one race, and then they invert the field, and you get to race again. And if you win the race from – if you win both the races, you get a big bonus money. I'm telling you, they make it a big-time event. It is awesome to see those faster sprint cars go from the rear to back to the front.
Yeah. They're fun. And I'll
well,
tell
we
you
are currently
about them
taking
too.
A lot of rain now, and I hate to think that 10 miles from here the racetrack is getting this rain, because from what I understand – race fans, there's already over 120 cars at practice at the Southern Street Stock Nationals tonight. This is not what Rodney Wing wanted to see, but hopefully the track will stay dry and they'll be able to get some more practice in this evening. Sorry about that quick
update.
Man,
I wish I was down there.
Yeah, we've been battling all this moisture, TJ. It has been a promoter's nightmare this year. Tracks have had to figure out a way to keep things going. Digging extra ditches in the pits and not putting as much water on the track. And you know how that happens. I mean, making a dirt track is just about as big of a recipe as grandma's chili. And if you don't have it just right, it's going to be off. And with all this extra added moisture that we've been getting, it's unreal. And while we're on the air, too, I want to take time to remember our brothers down there in Louisiana. And the last thing they need is any more rain. And it looks like there's another tropical depression coming up our way. So pray for those brothers down there in Louisiana and brothers and sisters who are going through a hard time right now.
No doubt, no doubt.
It's pretty bad down there.
Well, Steve, what you got?
That's what I was going to say, Steve. You're being
quiet tonight. I'm just listening. I'm just fascinated by the conversation. I'm learning all grades of stuff I didn't know before just listening to y'all talk. I mean, you know, old asphalt boy like me, this stuff is interesting as hell.
Well, you need to find me an asphalt ride.
This time not long ago. Have you still got
I think, TJ, you just hit the nail on the head. You've done road street stock. Yeah. You've been in the super late miles. You've been in the sprint car now. Now we got to get you in a sprint car on the asphalt track. How about that? What would you think about that?
I'd drive it, like I said before. If somebody wants to race tricycles, I'll do it.
I think tire wear becomes an issue, Steve, doesn't it, with sprints and asphalt?
I used to think so, but I saw a video on YouTube the other day. Some guy had a dirt late model hot lapping it on an asphalt track, and he was poking the tires on it. And I just
he was
thought,
doing
man,
more than hot lapping, sir. He was bowling them down. I ain't never in my life seen that much smoke coming out of tires going through the corner. I think he was drifting.
I've never seen anybody abuse a race car tire like that on asphalt. I mean, he was just wearing them out. I was just thinking, damn.
I want to know what kind of hub flanges, you know, drive flanges he had on that rear end. Because them dudes are stout.
No doubt, because that's a lot of G-force going in that rear end there.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that was rather interesting. TJ, I got to ask you, have you still got your pet pig?
Oh, yeah. I had to hook her up Tuesday, too.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, we still got her. She knocked the gate open Monday afternoon, and Becky didn't know it. She nudged the gate and opened it up, you know. Well, Becky let our lab and Boston Terrier out in the backyard and let them stay out there for a few hours. It wasn't raining. It was nice. Well, then Becky heard our lab barking in the garage. So she went and opened the back door, and our lab was standing there. She's like, what the heck? How'd you get out, you know? Well, our Boston Terrier was gone. Well, Gracie, my 7-year-old, Chandler, my little 2-year-old boy, they were screaming for Roki all night long. They'd walk out in the garage, Roki, Roki. That's the Boston's name, obviously. Well, you know, they were just heartbroken. He never come home. Well, we had the GPS chip, the actual, not just the one they scanned, but it's actually a GPS locator chip in him. Well, Tuesday morning, we found him. He was at the DeSoto County Animal Shelter. They picked him up. Well, Becky texted me when I was at work and told me, you know, that I had to go by there and get him or whatever. I was like, all right. Well, I left work about an hour early. I went by Tractor Supply and bought one of the electric fence deals, like you put around the top of your fence to keep dogs from jumping on them or for your cattle or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, I put it down on the ground next to our chain link in the backyard, so she'll quit nudging the gate to get out. And then there's one spot she just literally just goes underneath the fence, my big fat butt. Well, I hooked her up with that deal when I got home Tuesday and went and got the dog out of the pound and all that. Well, she found out while I was back there still doing it, I didn't have it plugged in for 5 minutes, and she popped it twice. She let out a squeal, bah, bah, ran off. But I hadn't seen her try to get out again. But we still have her little, I don't know, mischievous butt. She kept getting in the garage, flipping my totes over, my buckets of parts when I was building the sprint car. I kept flipping them over in the middle of the night, and she was getting aggravating.
Never a dull moment at the Hughes Estates, I tell you. But you do lead an interesting life. While we got a second here, give a shout-out to your friends, family, sponsors, whoever you want to recognize.
I want to thank Becky and the kids for helping me do everything, put up with all my mess, like always. Becky helped me outside on the car, and the kids, you know, so-called helped me put the sprint car together. They're excited about me racing it, and I want to thank them for supporting me. Then next is Jimmy Huffman, you know, thank you for being such a great friend and, you know, trusting in me and believing in me to spend the money you spent to get me these two cars and give me the opportunity to drive a sprint car. I've always wanted to. I can't thank him enough for that. I mean, it means the world to me. And I have James's Auto Repair and Collision. They support me 100%. They're always on my Facebook page, you know, telling me they're proud of me, whether I do good or bad. It means a lot. And then I have RE Technologies, Shocks by Carver, Bell Helmets, you know, keeps me in some good helmets, fire suits. As a matter of fact, I got some new shoes. I'll be here tomorrow. Let's see, Hero Graphics that does my vinyl. Have K&G Wheels, Tires, and Auto Accessories out of Bryan, Arkansas. It's Chandler Petty's dad and grandpa's business. That's it. I feel like I was forgetting something, but I don't think I am. And then, obviously, the good Lord for giving me the knowledge and strength and wisdom and everything else to get up every day and go to work and come home and thrash on the cars and then race on the weekends. And then I also want to.
Hey guys, I made it back
birthday.
On.
I
to
told y'all we had a bad
we had a bad storm roll through, and our power got knocked out there for a second and knocked off the cable line. So I'm calling back from another number. Can you guys hear me? Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good
DJ, take a second and tell everybody how they can follow you on social media, where you're at on Facebook and such.
All right. On Facebook, it's just simply TJ Hughes. Then I have a racing page. It's Kid Dynamite Racing, 19 Junior. It's 19JR. My Instagram name is Racer 19 Junior, RACER 19JR. Other than that, message me, talk to me, whatever. My profile is public, so anyone can talk. I do have to approve what you say, so watch what you say. I don't do any vulgar stuff or any of that on my pages. I don't know. I try to interact with everybody I can, so feel free to shoot me a message. Help anybody I can. So if you have a question, ask me. I'll tell you my honest answer. What I've learned or what I know or what I don't know, I'll tell you that too. So
there you go.
Yeah. So it makes it fun. It's helping everybody. Well, TJ, it was great having you on, and I hate that my interview kind of got messed up there by the power flicker, but looking forward to having you on again, and keep us up with what's going on with this sprint car thing. I'm really interested to learn as you learn what's going on here. I know we got our next guest ready. So. All right. Sounds like it. Y'all can check out our YouTube channel, too. It's Miss 19 Junior to watch all our videos. Becky films every race from the stands. It's MRS19JR. And then my YouTube channel, I always forget to load stuff, but when I do, it's TJ Hughes 19 Junior. And I have a 360 camera and a GoPro camera. I just recently remembered to start loading them on there instead of just Facebook. So go subscribe to those channels and Huffman Motorsports channel also on YouTube. And y'all can keep up everything we're doing. Like I said, watch in-car cameras and the videos from outside. So nice talking to y'all. Thank you for having me on.
TJ, before you jump off, before we get the next guest on, this is Mr. CJ Sports. I just want to throw this out there real quick. I've had the opportunity to be friends with TJ on Facebook since the first time he came on Steve's show. And if you guys are not following TJ on Facebook or any kind of social media, you guys are really missing out. He has some of the most inspirational stories, some of the most interesting tweets and Facebook status updates and stuff. If you guys really want to be inspired by somebody that is doing great things and is a good family guy and everything else, make sure you guys jump over there and check out TJ Hughes. He's just one of those great guys, and it's always fun when you see him come through your timeline. You know that you're going to get something that is worth reading and worth your time, and at the end of the day, something that's going to inspire you to want to be a better person.
That's cool.
Thank you very much.
He speaks the truth, too, people. I tell you, this young man is he's a very inspirational type person. He's a great driver. He's a great mechanic. He's a great father. He gets his kids interested in everything he does. And he's just an all-around good guy, and I'm glad to be friends with him. Thanks again for coming on, TJ. And trust me, buddy, we'll have you back on. We'll keep up with what you're doing.
Thanks, guys, for having me. And one more thing. Shorty Chambliss, rest in peace. It's been 2 years since Shorty passed away from cancer. So hashtag cancer, you suck. I love you, Shorty. Love you, Hannah. Love you, Renee. Love you, Diana, if everybody's listening. I don't know. I guess that's it. Y'all take care until next time, right? Thank you, sir. Yes, sir.
Good talking
with
you,
thank
bud.
Y'all.
We'll see you.
Y'all
all
too.
Right,
bye-bye.
Folks. Like we said, that was a young man you really ought to try to keep up with. He's a very interesting young fella, Mr. T.J. Hughes. And let's get on from the lower reaches of Mississippi to the upper reaches of Michigan, where our next driver, Mr. Terry Seneca,
yes, sir.
That's his stomping ground in the super late model class. Terry, you there with us, bud?
Yes, I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Good deal, Lucille. Glad to have you on. Seen some interesting video on Facebook from the Kalamazoo Clash. Tell us about that and how that went for you.
Oh, yeah. We We had a great car that day. We were the fast qualifier for the day. You know, the race paid $5,000 to win. They threw us $1,000 bonus to the fast qualifier to choose to start at the tail. And so we took the challenge. We started at the tail,
oh,
and then
boy.
it was another $1,000 if we come from the back and won the race. And we pulled it off, and you know, I had a GoPro on the dash, and definitely put on a great show for the fans, and put on a great video for the people on YouTube or Facebook. And it was something else. It was a great night. You know, we got a little bit lucky. You know, things kind of went our way, and sometimes you can do no right, but that was one of those nights where you could do no wrong.
Yeah, but that was some pretty outstanding driving that got you from the back to the front, though. And it's definitely evident in the video. I tell you, it's pretty exciting to watch. I was really impressed.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it was one of the most fun races I've ever run, you know, because we had a great car. We got to the front pretty quickly. 125 lap race, we got to the front in 41 laps.
41
laps. And then Tyler Roard, the 24 car, he came on pretty strong there in the mid race and gave me a good run for it. So it was a good show for the fans for sure.
And doubly good for you. What brand chassis was it you won the race in?
Well, it was my own. It was a Seneca Performance chassis. We probably had at least 10 cars in the field that day. So we were pretty strong in the Outlaw Series. We got a lot of cars out there. We got good teams, good drivers in our cars, you know, so they perform well. In the CRA Super Series, Brian Campbell won the race in one of our chassis also. So we swept the night, you know, swept both races, and we were pretty proud of that. Brian and his team, they're definitely showing off our equipment right now, and we're glad to be working with them. And I think they're happy with our equipment. You know, it's brought their program up quite a bit, and likewise, they've helped us out.
Your Seneca Performance business, how long have you been in business? How long have you been doing this?
It's been about 9 years. Yep, about 9 years I've been in business, and I just started, you know, just myself. I decided I wanted to do some fabricating on the side and doing some race car work, and we started tinkering with bending some tubing and built a couple cars, and it grew from there. You get one employee and then another, and then, I'd say, you know, one of our early stepping stones is J.R. Roerig and the Roerig family, you know, Tyler Roerig and J.R. Roerig, you know, decided to step up and put faith in me and put faith in what I was doing. And they were the first ones to, you know, to buy a car and committed to us. And it took their game, you know, and it put them, you know, from a mid-pack car right to the front, you know, front runner and the Outlaws. And that was one of the biggest jumps for me early on in the race car building business, you know. Somebody just to put faith in me. And see the potential it had, and then take that leap with us, and it paid off.
Yeah, that's the thing. You get it. You know, a lot of times in racing, it boils down to just somebody having faith in you and taking a chance, and then it turns around and pays off big time, which definitely is done in your case. I take it you've been around racing pretty much all your life, haven't you?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yep, we got a racing family. I got my dad and my uncles raced for years and years, and so we grew up on the weekends and the summers at the racetrack, and you know, we travel a little bit to follow the ASA series, and so I've been fortunate to be around it my whole life, and it's what we do. Some people camp, some people fish, some people you know, do other things, and we race, you know, so that's we enjoy it as a family.
Exactly. What relation are you to Bob Seneca?
He's my dad's brother, so he's my uncle.
He is your uncle. I remember he was a hot shoe in ASA back in my younger days, and he was somebody you always had to keep a an eye on if you planned on taking home the purse that night. He was very strong in the AFA draft and everything. You're running now in the outlaw late model class. Describe that for people such as myself that don't know that much about it and want to get a little bit more details on it. What separates it from, say, a regular super late model?
Yeah, it's very similar with the chassis side of things. Straight rail car, our track width is a couple inches wider. It's probably about 3 inches wider than a super late. We run on a very similar tire. You know, when we go to, like, Toledo or we run on the 40s and 50s, which the CRA Super Series runs on. So we run on a 10-inch slick tire. We're allowed 60% left side weight, just a little bit more left side weight. But the biggest difference is the outlaw wedge looking bodies, you know. So we do have rules, you know. We got to work within a box, but it's a lot more open than a fiberglass, you know, template body that the super lates have to run, you know. So definitely that picks the speed up the most is the aero.
Yeah, definitely. Look, I've never been able to see them run, but I'm looking at pictures of them, and they do have a lot more of an arrow shape to them than most of the other asphalt late model bodies do. Those cars are concentrated a lot in the northern Midwest, in the Michigan area. Am I correct?
Yes, that's correct. And it's really a neat series because you can fabricate your own body. It gives some creativity to the drivers, but you know that we do have to work within a box, so they're not too crazy. They're not like Indy cars or anything like that where it's getting too timely for people to hang their own bodies, you know. So it is a little bit more affordable for a driver to race in the outlaws, and you can use some creativity. So it is really a neat series, and our engine packages are not too far off of the CRA Super Series type engines, you know. Basically, we're just 360 cubic inch or under, and then no limit on compression, you know, single carburetor, you know, so not too far off. The CRA Super Series or the Super Lates usually are limited with their carburetor and their compression ratio for the most part.
Yeah.
So y'all put the outlaw back in late model, huh? Y'all put the outlaws back in late models. I like that idea. No compression.
Right.
Yeah. Tell me, how many cars in the field do y'all have?
Well, the last race we raced at Kalamazoo, we had about 30. We had 30 plus cars. I think about 32 cars ran a last chance. Sent some home, and they started. I started 23rd in that race. 22nd or 23rd. So a pretty good field for that one. Just like all racing, it's not quite as, the car counts aren't quite as strong as they used to be, but you know, in a good show, we're seeing mid-20s, you know, mid-20s for cars, 30 cars, and you know, so in the Midwest, you know, Michigan, Indiana, Ohio, you know, they're pretty popular, the outlaw cars.
How much are you guys running for on a weekly basis?
Like up at Berlin Raceway, we're running for 2,500 a week. Or 2,000 a week, I think it is actually. Some of the other shows, usually it's 1,000, 1,200 to win. You know, usually they got a two tire rule. I had a couple tracks, you know, keep the tire costs down for everybody. But yeah, usually about 2,000 to win, a common show.
No,
and then we do have.
No small pennies there, Steve.
No, but like
Wait,
what's
what?
Nice is. We do have the specials, you know. We have quite a bit of specials throughout the summer, so you probably have about a half a dozen specials that pay $5,000 to win, you know, so they bump up the pay. There were, you know, probably 3 or 4 years ago, there was a handful of races that paid $10,000 to win, you know, and as racing, you know, dives down a little bit, you know, the payouts have gone down a little bit, which is unfortunate, but I think it's that way all the way across the country.
How about your expenses? Are y'all like most of the asphalt late models? Do you have to buy a set of tires every race, or can you bring your tires from home?
Yeah, typically it's an impound deal, yep, where we buy the tires right at the track. You know, they scan them, make sure nobody's soaking them or altering them, which is good. You know, that keeps a lot of work out of it for the teams. So it's usually one set of tires. But usually our payout, you know, covers the – or start money covers the tire bill anyways which is good.
Yeah, definitely. So, if you know, if you can cover the tire bill starting the race, then it's a good night, definitely, on asphalt. I'm getting the messages from the guy that was on before you, TJ Hughes. He wants to come drive one of your cars.
Oh, yeah, we can trade.
He's a dirt late model driver, and he likes the look of yours, and from what he's heard and everything, he's getting pretty excited all over again.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he probably checked out, he was probably checking out that video I got on there. That thing, yeah, they're definitely
yeah.
a lot of fun. You know, it's a different deal than the dirt world. We don't get all, if the car's tipping over or lifting up in the back or rolling over, that's usually a really bad thing on asphalt. So we're doing everything we can to get the attitude right and keep it sucked right down to the ground and keep everything planted, you know. So it's definitely a different deal.
Tell me what goes into a typical setup on an asphalt car and how much of a difference between, a quarter-mile track and a half-mile track. Is there very much difference in the setup, Terry?
I wouldn't say a big difference, no. I mean, obviously, tracks vary quite a bit with how rough they are, you know. Like, there's smooth tracks, there's rough, wavy, bumpy tracks, there's flat out just abrasive tire wear out tracks. So that's the biggest difference. Not so much the size of the track, but probably the surface itself. Whether it's, you know, a wavy, bumpy track, you know, we got to build more compliance into the suspension to get through the bumps without being, you know, without the car lifting off the ground and the tires lifting off the ground. On a smooth track, we can be more aggressive with shocks and springs where we can suck it right down to the track and you're not going to lift any tires off the ground going through any bumps or anything like that. So that's probably the biggest thing is just the abrasiveness of the track and how wavy or bumpy it is.
What's the biggest event you've ever won or the one that stands out the most?
Probably the Glass City 200. It ranks right up there with the Clash. I won the Kalamazoo Clash 5 times. That's always been a premier event. At one time it paid up to $30,000 to win. They had another year where it paid $20,000 to win. I unfortunately didn't get to win those ones, but I won a couple of the $10,000 clashes, and that was a pretty big deal. And then the Toledo Glass City 200, that race has been around for years and years since, you know, my dad and Uncle Bob were racing, and that means a lot to me to win that one. Pretty prestigious event. You know, a lot of big names on that list. It's almost like ranks up there, like with the Winchester 400, you know, and some of the names that have won that race.
Pretty cool. I'm just now getting to your site there. And is there a history behind the number? Is that a family number?
Yeah, that's one of my dad's old numbers, yep. He ran that number for a while. He had a couple different ones, but that was one that stood out in my mind. And, yep, so that's no other deal than that. I always looked up to him and growing up. And when I started racing, that's my mentor, my hero, you know. I always looked up to him and his racing.
The reason why I asked that is there's a picture of you and somebody else, and it's the number 36 truck back in the background. Is that something that y'all used to race?
Oh, that's my brother. Yep, that's my brother. We were 36 and 37. And unfortunately, he was killed in a snowmobile accident back in 2001. But that's been a long time. He was 36, so that was 37, so... And then I raced a 36 template car a couple years ago in tribute, you know, 36 in tribute to him. And now that same car, Brian Campbell, is running a little bit now. So I kind of passed the wick to him. I was getting too busy with my schedule to take on two different kinds of cars and two different classes. So Brian Campbell kind of taking the pick for our template program there.
Hang on a minute, Terry. TJ, you there?
Sure. Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
All right.
Terry, this is T.J. Hughes, the young driver from Mississippi we were talking with earlier, who's gotten interested in your rides now.
Oh yeah. I've got a question. When you was just talking about different shocks and springs for the tracks being smooth or rough, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
Like, how much of a difference do you normally change, like, on spring rates? You know, per se, per track, or do you have a baseline that you run pretty much at every track you go?
Yeah, kind of a baseline. I would say more so with our cars. I mean, it's more the bump stop package than the overall spring package.
Yeah.
If we go to a real high bank track or a really bumpy track, I mean, definitely we go up with spring rate overall. But for the most part, you know, we are playing with bump stop packages, and we got everything from, you know, rubbers, different hardness of, bump rubbers, stacking them up.
Yeah.
Higher to get more compliance in them, bump springs, I mean, rates from soft to, you know, through the moon, stiff, and, you know, and it really depends on the track and the tire that we're on and all that takes into effect what we decide to run for the night.
Yeah. On the average, like, about how much suspension travel do y'all have in the asphalt plate model?
Well, in the front, we got quite a bit. You know, our shocks are, we're traveling three and a half inches in the front, quite a bit. And then, in the back, inch to inch and a half of travel.
Could you, like on a really smooth track, could you pretty much calm that down to even less?
On a flat. Yeah, on a flat track, smooth. Yeah, for sure. You can definitely calm it down.
Right.
But, you know, like, the biggest thing is, you know, we try to start with the front ends up higher, you know, and get that aero advantage, you know, travel on the front end, get the blade up in the air, get the roof down lower. Just get that wedge effect going on, you know. So that's, you know, you see all the stock cars, the pavement cars, you know, rolling through tech and the nose is flying through tech, and then they get out on the track and they're all sealed off and down and the blade's way up, and that's what everybody's pretty much trying to achieve.
Uh-huh. Well, I sent you a friend request on Facebook a while ago.
Oh, great.
When you get done with this or whatever, if you want to accept it or whatever, but shoot me a message. I've got a couple of things I want to talk to you about that I've been thinking about, and I think an asphalt car would be a better way to try it and see if you'd be willing to even tell me if you think I'm stupid for the way it works or not, but it's something I want to try on a dirt car. I'm not going to put it out there yet, but...
Okay, sure.
It sounds like you do a lot of your own stuff like I do, so...
Well, we're always open-minded, yeah. I mean, we're definitely thinkers. We're always thinking and always thinking of a better way.
Sounds like
we've
got a couple of Allen's on our hands.
That's the fun part of it, the engineering, yeah.
Everybody's like, everybody always asks me, you know, like, why are you changing this or why are you messing with that? You know, you was fast, you won, or you should have won, or, you know, whatever. Well, you know, if I don't do it, the people that were slower than me might figure out something this week that'll be faster.
That's right. That's right. You got to think of a new way for sure. You got to keep moving.
Non-stop.
If you stay stagnant, the competition's going to pass you by.
That's right. Well, all right, that's all I wanted. That's all I want to do is ask you a couple questions, you know, about stuff like that or whatever. And I guess, you know, message me if you're interested or whatever, because I'd like to know if what I'm thinking is crazy or not. I don't think it is, because it's already a form of suspension that's already being used in certain cars.
Okay.
But
yep.
I don't know. Yeah, just message me or whatever, because I'd be interested in seeing.
Yeah, we got a lot of listeners now wanting to know what's conspiring between y'all two. We might need to keep this a little bit more hush-hush, you know.
Yeah. And another thing is talked to a guy that used to own some NASCAR, I think it was trucks or Busch cars. I'm not sure what all it was. And sprint cars and all that mess, too. And I asked him about it. And he said, yeah, it sounds like a great idea. He'd be interested in helping me, too. He, like, come up with the design to actually do it. Because I'm kind of lost of how to limit it to the amount. So, but anyhow, yeah, just message me, man.
Absolutely.
Good talking to you.
I'll hear you out for sure.
All right, man. Keep up the good work, dude.
All right. Thanks. You too.
Thanks, y'all, for having me back on.
Anytime, bud.
All right. Bye.
You get your racing mind going and you get focused. Off you go.
Yeah.
Terry, while we got a break in the action, go ahead and give a shout out to anybody you want to recognize, anybody that, you know, you feel like deserves a little recognition.
Yeah, absolutely. The guys at Baker Engineering, engine builders, great engine builder up in Michigan. We run JRI shocks on the car. We've partnered up with Ernest Performance with the JRI shocks. So me and him together come up with a package for our Centric Performance customers, and really got a good shock package on the car. I got some local sponsors, Oatman Excavating, Enterprise Iron Metal. And then Winners Performance, Sweet Manufacturing, guys that help us out. And I guess that's about it. Anybody I can think of off the top of my head.
About on social media, what's the best way to keep up with you and let people know how they can see that video if they haven't yet?
Sure. Well, they probably find that video on YouTube if they just search 2016 Clash or Seneca Clash. I'm not great about my Twitter feeds, but it's at Terry Seneca on Twitter. And then my Facebook, I stay pretty up to date on that. And it's just Terry Seneca, my name, on Facebook. You can search it out. And then, that's linked to my business page, Seneca Performance. And anybody can go to senecaperformance.com. We got some products on there. And it's not limited to just what's online there, but that kind of gives a little bit of variety, some of the bump stops that we have and shocks. But definitely, give us a call in person and find out more what we have to offer as far as bump stops, shocks, setup, work, chassis, all that good stuff.
Definitely so, bud. I'm glad we finally got to get you on the show. We tried two or three times, and one thing or another, we could never get you up. I'm really glad I got to meet you and got to talk to you and hear from you. And we definitely want to get you back on later on in the year to see how these Seneca Performance cars are running and how you're doing with yours.
Absolutely, yep. We got good things to come with our Super Late program, so I'm excited about that. And we'll definitely have to talk about that more in the next interview.
Yeah, no doubt, Steve. I think we left some things on the table with this one here. I'll be looking forward to having Terry back on.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, anytime I can sit and listen and learn something, it's great news for me.
All right, well, thanks. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Thanks for coming on, Terry. We'll definitely be in touch.
Okay, we'll talk to you again soon.
Great. Good night, bud.
Yeah.
Really good show tonight, Chris. I thought rather informative, to say the least.
As always, Steve, and I mean, other than me getting cut out by an electrical storm, we've yet to get our internet systems back up, so I was kind of struggling to do the bios on these drivers, but I think it all worked out good, Steve, and as always, we kicked another one of the fastest hours in racing radio there.
I know. I was just sitting here with my jaw hung open, some of that, just listening to especially the back and forth between Terry and TJ and stuff like that. I mean, that's good stuff. I don't care who you are.
That's right.
So let's go around the room and let everybody say good night. Mr. CJ Sports, tell everybody what you got going on.
Make sure you guys check us out on Facebook, 110 Nation Sports. You can hit us up on Twitter, at 110 Nation. We got the 110 Nation Sports Show every Monday through Wednesday, 8 to 10 p.m. And also check out our blog site, www.the110nationsports.com. We've built a really, really great relationships with a bunch of different PRs and different teams. And there's a lot of great press releases, and then we got a couple of people writing and doing some great articles over there. So make sure you guys check that out and help support the 110 Nation.
Yeah, I definitely got to get my blog put up there too, get back to that. Mr. Yellow Caution Flag, tell us what you got going on this weekend. I know one thing.
The biggest street stock race you'll ever see at Why Not Motorsports Park in Why Not, Mississippi, right outside Meridian, Mississippi, down Highway 19 South. Rodney Wings, that's the House of Hook. He tells everybody, be there. And let me tell you something. If you're not there this weekend, you are square. Cut the square out. Make a circle. Come down, support your local dirt tracks. You can find the updates on that Flag of Caution on Twitter, yellowcautionflag.com on Facebook. And we'll be looking forward to another week of racing dirt track style in the southeastern region. Like we said earlier, the season's winding down, and now's the time to get out. The kids are back in school. Everybody's looking for something to do on the weekends. Well, guess what? We have the place to be right out here at these local tracks. So come on out and support us and buy you some hot dogs and some T-shirts and some race tickets. And we'll just have us a great old time at your local racetrack.
Attaboy. Chris, thanks again for coming on, bud. I really appreciate it. Always a pleasure. If you want to keep up with me on Twitter, I'm at BigSweat4. They call me the NASCAR Heartbreaker and Home Wrecker. Easiest way to find me is on my Facebook group, NASCAR and Other Racing. We do a lot of intelligent and informative discussions about all types of racing, be it Formula One, dirt track, sprint cars, whatever. If it's racing, we're going to talk about it. So come join the group and check us out, NASCAR and Other Racing. Sit in with myself and Mr. CJ Sports on Monday nights at 7 o'clock. It's Rubbin' Is Racing, where we go back over what happened the previous weekend in NASCAR racing. So check it out Monday night. We'll definitely be talking about what's happening at Bristol tomorrow night and Saturday night. And go to the 110 Nation Sports site, Facebook site, and check out my blog, NASCAR Shit, Racing with Big Sweat. I tell you, I'm all over the place. But check one of those out if you want to know what I'm thinking about racing. And I love talking about racing, and that's why I'm here. Thank you again, Chris, for coming on and sitting in with me. Thank you, Mr. CJ Sports, for allowing me this platform to talk about racing, and thank you, fans, for listening in. It is greatly appreciated. We'll talk to you next week. See ya.